Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to A Fine Time for Healing, a sanctuary for your emotional well-being. Your host is Randy Fine, author of the memoir Finally, and the inspirational self-help book Awaken from Life. Here's Randy.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, Randy Fine. One of the most damaging ways in which we tend to abuse ourselves is through feelings of guilt. Often this tendency was programmed into us in childhood. Good, well-intentioned people fall prey to this kind of self-abuse most often because by nature, we tend to be more concerned with the feelings of others than we are with our own. And because of that nature, compassionate people would never dream of inflicting the same kind of guilty emotional pain on others as they inflict on themselves without giving it a second thought. So today, obviously, we are going to be talking about the topic of guilt. And we have today's special expert, Darlene Lancer, is the author of several books, including Codependency for Dummies and the new book, Freedom from Guilt and Blame, Finding Self-Forgiveness, a step-by-step workbook for healing guilt and finding self-forgiveness and self-compassion. Freedom from Guilt and Blame is designed to free you from guilt's grip. It will help you sort out healthy from toxic guilt and distinguish it from other emotions such as shame and regret. In Darlene's book, you're guided to review and assess your values, motives, responsibilities, actions, and beliefs, and understand the negative impact of perfectionism and codependency. This is Darlene's second time on A Fine Time for Healing. She is a licensed marriage and family therapist and relationship codependency expert, and over the course of 25 years, she has helped men and women recover from trauma, achieve greater self-esteem and autonomy, and find their paths professionally and personally. So now it is my privilege and my honor to welcome to my show Darlene Lancer. Good morning, Darlene. How are you?
Oh, good, Randy. Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to speak to your audience. I've been working with people for almost 30 years.
Oh, my gosh. So,
yeah,
wow.
I kind of lost somewhere around 28 or 9, something like that.
Wow, that's really good. Okay, well, I'm going to correct that in your bio. But So today we're here to talk about one of your newest books, and later on I'll mention the other one. So we're going to talk about guilt. So can you explain to us what guilt is?
Well, guilt is really a self-evaluation, or sometimes it's the judgment of others that makes us feel guilty. And it's when we fail to measure up to norms of or values about right and wrong. It's considered a moral emotion for this reason. And in my opinion, it's a combination of anger, or angry at ourselves, and fear of rejection, fear of punishment, And it usually produces anxiety and a lot of mental angst. We can't stop thinking about it. It just takes us out of the present. So it's a really uncomfortable emotion to be with. But it's more like a mental preoccupation than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. That makes sense. We are programmed to do this, and I guess we can, and we'll probably talk about this later, that we really can unprogram or deprogram ourselves from having this response, but so many of us do this. Where does it come from?
Well, yes, you know, I think everybody's heard of having a superego, a Freudian term, or a conscience, and we develop that as children in part of our being socializing children to conform to norms, you know, not to hit, not to throw things, you know, how to behave at the table. So that's part of socialization. And your parents teach children how, you know, the difference between right and wrong. They teach them about morality. And, well, some of it now they're discovering is actually programmed into us, like very young children will not like stuffed animals that are mean to another stuffed animal. They've done tests like this. So some of it may be innate. But so anyway, there's programming in our, part of it is maybe genetic and part of it is how we're socialized to learn the difference between right and wrong and to have a conscience. Now, some people, though, live with a guilty conscience, and so that's different. The reason that I wrote this book is that I realized that I had a blog on overcoming guilt, and by far, most of the comments and inquiries I got in reaction to my blog, which I put up a new post every month, was on the one on overcoming guilt. So it seemed like there was really a need for that in the population at large. And many people have contacted me that they felt guilty about something for years. And sadly, often it's irrational guilt.
Right. Yeah, I do believe this is a really, really common problem that people have. And it, I mean, some of us are raised and we're disciplined through guilt in an unhealthy way. And then we find it in religion. There's religious guilt. There's all kinds of things that where we're actually taught to feel guilty for things that really don't serve us very well. I mean, I know that there's healthy guilt and there's unhealthy guilt.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention our culture and religion have a big impact on what we feel guilty about. And some try to shame you, actually, which is a little different than guilt, into doing the right thing. And some cultures use shame as a way of raising children. That's more in collective cultures, more in Latin America and Asia. In Europe, in the West, guilt is more a tool for raising children. But it can be used inappropriately, too. And sometimes when it borders into shaming, then people just are preoccupied with guilt all the time. And perfection, having perfectionistic standards can make you feel guilty all the time because you're failing. You're never at your unrealistic ideals. There's no such thing as perfection. But you can set yourself to always, and that's also a way of shaming yourself.
Right. I mean, I had a Jewish mother who did everything through guilt. So I had to really
relate.
My
once said to my mother, "You're making me feel guilty." She says, "Well, you should feel guilty."
Oh, gosh, that's awful. So we feel guilty about things that we've done and things that we can't change from the past. So why do we get so caught up in these thoughts? And, you know, it doesn't really help us at all, does it, Darlene?
Well, Perseverating on it doesn't help at all. That's a really not a healthy way or productive way to deal with guilt. On the other hand, to my surprise, when I wrote Conquering Shame and Codependency and did a lot of research for the book too, research has been done on moral emotions. And one of the things they found actually is that guilt can lead to self-growth and self-esteem. So it has some really benefits, advantages to it. So it's some people say, well, you can't change the past, just forget it, let go of it. And that doesn't work either, and that's not necessarily helpful, because when we're living with guilt, and when it's, whether it's reasonable or unreasonable, those feelings can stay in our unconscious, and it can prevent us from living in the present. For instance, I know someone who felt guilty because of things his wife said to him when she was dying. And he would not allow himself to love anyone after that for years. He wanted to, some wishes of his wife that, you know, he love only her, for instance. So
oh, gosh.
It impaired him moving forward. Or sometimes people feel guilty about a divorce or for their marriage or for a child's addiction. And they may try not to think about it, but then they deprive themselves of happiness. There's an unconscious script that they deserve punishment. And sometimes this is because of things a parent said, and sometimes it's things in our adulthood. Or I know of people who, let's say, had a disabled brother or sister, and so they feel guilty surpassing that sibling being
okay.
successful.
Right.
So even
exactly.
if things are past, they can still, you know, sabotage us until we really look at them and untangle them and analyze them.
Right. I think it's important that we all understand what the true purpose of guilt is, and when we're using it inappropriately. So can you sort of explain how guilt can, you know, be a benefit to us? What it's really meant for, as far as you know, our moral compass, and what it's really not best for.
Sure. Well, guilt will help us make amends, so it helps repair relationships. In this way, it promotes empathy. We think about the impact we've had on others, and it might encourage us to reach out to others. Our focus is more on the effect or the impact of what we did. Unlike shame, the focus is on ourselves, what others think of us. And that promotes hiding and withdrawing and preoccupation, going internally. We're more afraid of abandonment. And whereas guilt, it can lead to self-improvement. Well, if you're really conscientious about changing yourself, and I'll get more into that later, but it's part of contrition, is that it can lead to self-improvement. So you really reflect on your behavior and areas where you need to improve or change, and this leads to empowerment. Whereas shame, we feel irredeemable. I think a lot of people fall into, from guilt, they go into shame. So it's not just, I can't believe I did that, which is what you did. You focus on your behavior. It's like, I can't believe I did that. What's wrong with me? How stupid I was. Then it's self-shaming. And that's where it gets very deleterious to who we are, to our self-esteem, to our moods and our ability to function, because we feel irredeemable. That's, I guess I'm a failure. I'm just not a good person, or nobody likes me. And that can lead, shame can lead to antisocial behavior. And then there's all the reactions to shame. It might lead to rage and things like that. And it can cause anxiety, depression, low self-esteem. But it's interesting that in studies where they showed people who had guilt without the shame, so shame-free guilt, actually there were no psychological negative symptoms. Those were all associated with self-shaming.
So interesting.
It can reduce your antisocial behavior. You want to behave appropriately rather than lash out in anger, or to humiliate others or be a bully and things like that. That's all from shame. So it can really empower us to feel better about ourselves. And there are many examples, you know, of people who have turned their lives around after horrendous things where they've done wrong and committed crimes.
Right.
I'm
sorry, was I interrupting? I didn't mean to.
I'm sorry. I think maybe you didn't finish. I didn't finish answering your question.
Oh, okay.
More to it?
Yeah.
Well, can you ask me again, please? What else did you ask?
We'll get back into it, but I was actually going to say that one way that I check myself from feeling guilty about something is I always say, and I actually said this in the beginning of the show, in my intro, I always say to myself, why are you making yourself feel so bad? Would you make somebody that you care about feel as bad as you're making yourself feel? Is this really something that you're supposed to beat yourself up over? And would you want somebody to hurt the way you're hurting yourself? And that's generally how I check myself. And then I go, no, I wouldn't do this to somebody else. I'm not going to do it to myself. And I'm going to let it go. But we have to be very conscious of the fact that we are doing this to ourselves. And it is a self-sabotage kind of thing, shaming ourselves, isn't it?
Definitely self-shaming it. And if guilt goes on and on and on without really examining it, then it's considered self-punishment. And I think how you deal with it, it shows a lot of self-compassion. And that's one of the ways of healing. I think there are a lot of steps involved, but that's definitely part of it. And it's hard for many people if they have guilt that hasn't been addressed. Then, you know, one of the ways of loving yourself is really dealing with mistakes you made and coming to terms with them. So the problem is that a lot of people have false guilt. So true guilt is what I'm referring to as like healthy guilt for our acts or omissions when we violate our own moral standards. And then false guilt is unjustified. It's often not even based in reality. It can be irrational. So those are, you know, those are things that you want to weed out and not keep doing to yourself. And I always tell people, I think you'll have another opportunity to do it differently. So when people feel guilty about mistakes, in other words, look forward. You know, and what can I learn from this? What is it saying about me or about my behavior? What can I glean from this for self-improvement? Those are just some a healthier attitude to take about guilt. You know, Eldridge Cleaver said famously, if you're not part of the solution, then you're part of the problem. And I think it applies here because when you don't get into the solution, you stay in the problem. It's more and more self-punishment.
It's very, very true. Very true. Once we learn the tools, you know, if we do something, if we wrong someone, we can apologize, we can make amends for our behaviors, and then as long as we don't do it again, that's really where it should end. If someone holds us accountable beyond that point, That's not really our responsibility once we've apologized and made amends and not repeated the behavior. Isn't that right?
Well, yes. You know, there's saying, not a saying, but like a tradition, for instance, in the Jewish religion, that you make amends to somebody, you attempt to apologize three times. And if the person doesn't accept your apology, then they're the one with the problem, basically. Then you're
right.
Forgiven if you try at least three times. But on the other hand, you know, codependents in particular are often always saying, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not true remorse. It's just to make peace. They'll say, I'm sorry, so that their partner or friend is no longer angry at them, to just patch up the relationship because they don't want to be abandoned. And they haven't really dealt with the other, respected or empathized with the other person's feelings. Sometimes with couples, you don't even have to say, I'm sorry, if you really show that you care about the impact of your behavior. The words, I'm sorry, don't matter as much as someone really wants you to know how you hurt them and how you impact them. And sometimes listening openly and compassionately to that is more important than the words that are easy. I'm sorry can be easy when it's not really heartfelt. And then sometimes, you know, codependents will be apologetic where they have nothing to feel guilty for in many cases. That's a big problem because it comes from the shame, the internalized shame from childhood and that goes with codependency. So they're feeling guilty all over the place, and it's irrational guilt. It's false guilt.
Right. And they feel responsible for so many things that really have nothing to do with them. But I know, I mean, I was codependent for many years. And having grown up in a narcissistic abusive home, I was the one who really came out with it with the most codependence out of the three girls. So I certainly understand that, feeling, you know, taking on much more than you really have to. So when we feel guilty... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I can give you some examples, if you'd like, of that.
Okay, sure.
Well, codependents often feel guilty about being a burden to someone.
Right.
I once had a patient that I said to her, you know, I was thinking about you, and I thought maybe this book would be helpful. And she actually felt guilty that I was thinking about her between sessions. That
oh my gosh, wow.
That she or that someone is a burden. They feel like their problem is a burden. They feel guilty for talking too long or taking up too much attention. That's actually a lot of this comes from shame. They feel guilty for their needs. They don't ask for what they need. They're always often self-sacrificing, and to. Sometimes people feel guilty about winning in a competition. So, again, they're not supposed to shine, whereas someone who is the opposite only wants to win. Only, you know, they don't feel good about themselves unless they win. And then a codependent might feel too guilty if they do win or if something good happens to them. Well, someone else in their family is sick or suffering. They don't want to talk about it. They want to hide it. They feel guilty for maybe having needs, other needs. For one client was shamed for wanting food. He was hungry between meals, and he was shamed for that. It's very common for people to feel guilty about masturbating or sexual feelings. Women more than men in our culture. A client felt guilty for, and this was also because of religion, of feeling proud. That was considered conceited. So feeling good about yourself was like bragging to say anything positive about yourself. And then it's very common for people to feel guilty for their emotions because of lack of boundaries. They feel guilty for the emotions of their partner. So if your partner is sad, right away you think, what did I do? It must be my fault. Or if they tell you, you know, they're feeling angry or some other negative feeling, right away it's like their partner, you might get defensive and say, well, I didn't do anything. And then it leads to arguments because they're taking responsibility for their partner's feelings. There's no space there's no separation. So those, and then, of course, saying no. They feel guilty saying no. And they might even feel guilty for the actions of others. If their partner gets drunk, they will blame themselves. And the addict will blame their addiction on their spouse. So they're used to being blamed, and they will just accept the blame. So, you know, I remember in line with your earlier comment, my mother was blaming me for something, and it was really, it had more to do about her. I'm thinking of two stories now, and the other one is actually more appropriate. She was blaming something me for something that had to do with her and her friend. And I just said, well, I don't take responsibility for that. And it really just stopped her in her tracks because she was so used to blaming me. And then another time I'd say, well, I guess I just was not a good enough daughter.
Oh, gosh.
I guess I'll never be the daughter. And again, it took the wind out of her sails. She just didn't know where to go with that because she's so used to being criticizing me. But after a while, I learned not to take it personally. And because before that, I would feel so bad that I, you know, wasn't getting her approval all the time. So,
right.
And then as I said, codependents tend to be perfectionists.
Mm-hmm.
So, and sometimes they can be moral perfectionists. They become the nice girl or the good boy, then, you know, becomes spiritual, and then it's like bad to be angry. They have a lot of ideals about what it means to be spiritual or to be perfect in a moral sense. And so even having negative thoughts about someone, they feel guilty about that. Or feeling guilty about, this gets into unproductive guilt too, and part of the things I go into in my book is they feel guilty about their thoughts. They feel guilty about their feelings. Why aren't I over this, you know, my ex? Or I shouldn't be depressed, all these shoulds. And I feel guilty about wanting sex with someone that I, you know, outside my marriage or relationship. Rather than really exploring it, maybe it's because they're not getting their needs met in the relationship.
Right.
But there's reasons when we start to look at it, look at guilt. That's one of the first things I say is to really understand your motives, what needs are being met or not being met, rather than just ruminating, dismissing it, denying it, rationalizing it, punishing yourself, blaming yourself, or a lot of times people cover up guilt by blaming someone else.
That's true.
They put up a wall of anger not to deal with their guilt.
Right. Yes, I've experienced pretty much all the things that you've said, you know, some myself and some with my experiences with others.
Mm-hmm.
I find that people have a lot of guilt around honoring their parents because sometimes, especially children, adult children, that have been emotionally abused or physically abused and really do not have honorable parents, they really, really struggle with that need to honor them and feel good about their parents and love their parents and be an active part of their lives, when actually that's not something that serves them well, right, Darlene?
Well, it's true. I mean, it can cut both ways. Sometimes people get in touch with their anger about abuse in their childhood, and they don't complete their therapy, or their therapy isn't that effective to help them come to terms with it and accept it and realize their parents are flawed and move on from that. They can get stuck in their anger. But particularly with parents that have owned their mistakes, made amends, if they're no longer being abusive as an adult, that's a different situation than a parent that continues to be abusive. And then
correct.
Just in protection and self-care, you wouldn't want to keep subjecting yourself
right.
to that toxic, abusive parent.
And I think the latter, the second part of what you said, is really what I'm referring to,
okay.
is those who are still experiencing that abuse, and yet they keep putting themselves back into it, and they're more worried about the guilt feelings they have over their parents than they are about protecting their self against the abuse. So I think that's really, it was really the second part of that. But that makes, you know, both I understand both aspects of that. So,
right, well, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say.
What kind of therapy, how do you help people overcome their guilt?
Well, there's several approaches. I think what is very effective is cognitive behavioral therapy, because, as I said, guilt causes a lot of perseveration and anxiety. We think about it over and over, you know, in a negative way. And teasing out what is our responsibility versus others. In your example, for instance, it's misplaced. The guilt is misplaced. It's the parent that isn't taking responsibility for their behavior. So then child is feeling responsible, and it's their duty, whereas the parent is not taking responsibility. So really, in looking at your intent, you know, and this is part of cognitive therapy, what would someone else do? People tend to globalize and exaggerate, and they don't really think properly about what happened. They feel guilty for things they don't even have power over. Survivor's guilt, for instance. Or it's common to feel guilty when someone dies. I know someone whose partner hung himself, and she discovered it, and she felt very guilty. Well, she had nothing to do with it. Witness abuse, where children feel plagued by guilt because their sibling was punished, beaten or something in front of them, and they did nothing. Well, they had no power.
Right.
So things like that, or acts of God. So cognitive therapy really helps you to look at it more clearly, to examine your standards. Are they yours, or are they your parents? Do they belong to the church? You know, just because you feel guilty doesn't mean you are guilty. And I don't know if you knew, I was a lawyer for many years, and part of that time I worked in criminal law. And so in criminal law, there's something called mens rea, which means guilty mind. So for most crimes, unlike things like speeding tickets, but for most, that's not even a crime, but for most crimes, it requires a guilty mind, which means you have to intend the wrongdoing. So a lot of times people feel guilty when their intentions, they were well-intended at the time. Maybe
sure.
you didn't have all the facts, or maybe you weren't mature enough or you didn't really think through the consequences of your behavior. And so that's really important to really look at that. And then another approach is more a spiritual approach. Through religion and an emotional approach is learning self-compassion. I cover all of these in my ebook. So the cognitive, the spiritual, the emotional. And so those are, there are many approaches to deal with it.
Right. Yeah, there are. And, you know, like we talked about before, you know, once you, you know, people that tend to beat themselves up are people that do not have self-love and, you know, and they suffer from many things from that. So finding that, coming to appreciate yourself and your place in the world really helps with many things, but especially guilt. We're 35 minutes into the hour, Darlene, and I wanted to give you the floor. I know you wanted to talk about the bonus article that you can offer, and, you know, just whatever you really want to talk about. Take about 5 minutes and
oh, yes. Well, there's a, I can happy, if people email me, I'll happy to send them my article on overcoming guilt, and another one on the difference between true and false guilt. My website is whatiscodependency.com, and there's lots of blogs on there. I just wrote one on self-esteem and relationships. And on my website, there's links to my Facebook page, which I post tips and articles every day, not just mine, but other people's and research. And I have a YouTube channel, which people can listen to, and I'm on Twitter. This book in particular is called Freedom from Guilt and Blame, Finding Self-Forgiveness. So it's, again, looking at it is often painful. It can be especially painful when we've hurt someone that we love. But in doing so, it can free us to not only improve ourselves and improve our relationships, but also to have more productive lives and to really flourish rather than punish ourselves. But people punish themselves in so many ways. Sometimes it comes out in their health, accidents, or just not having good health because they don't feel entitled to be happy. Many people don't realize underneath, and this goes into shame, which is a little deeper than guilt, because it affects your whole sympathetic nervous system. It's a more global emotion. And more painful, actually, than even as bad as guilt can be. But it affects your whole nervous system, where sometimes people don't even feel that it's okay to succeed. But some of it stems from guilt in our childhood, being messages that we got and that are actually shaming messages. And parents shame us intentionally sometimes and unintentionally. So when it borders on shame, it can be destructive and turn into what's called internalized shame or toxic shame. And then we carry it around as adults, and it makes us very susceptible to guilt, to other people's blame, and to our own. We don't even have to be with anybody. We can do it to ourselves. If we look in the mirror, we can start shaming ourselves. If we make mistakes, we can start blaming ourselves. But as we heal and overcome this, we can feel more entitled to say no without feeling guilty, to get our needs met, to not take responsibility for other people's feelings. So there's a lot of freedom involved with that. We're not responsible for other people's problems. And then we can ask for what we want. There's a lot less conflict in relationships. A lot of times, escalating conflict comes from underlying shame and guilt and these lack of boundaries and taking false responsibility. People get defensive because they're taking responsibility for other people's feelings or their partner's feelings. Right away, they start defending themselves. And before you know it, the two are off to the races in an argument that has nothing to do with what happened.
Right. We are we're getting close to the end of the time. I wanted to ask you, your book is strictly an e-book?
It's strictly an e-book.
Okay, and so you can get it on Amazon, and where else can you can it be found?
You can get it on my website in a PDF. It's on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble. It's also on Smashwords.com, which has devices for Kobo and Apple and other devices that I'm not that familiar with. Or you can just get on my website and download it as a PDF.
Okay. I mean, this has been a really great discussion, and I know that this is going to really touch a lot of people. So many people experience this, and this is such a great book. It's really, really wonderful that you wrote this to help people. And to my listeners, Darlene will be back on this coming Tuesday, February 9th, also at 11 a.m. Eastern time, although all shows are archived. But she will be back to discuss her other new book, which is called Dealing with a Narcissist, 8 Steps to Improve Self-Esteem and Set Boundaries on Difficult Relationships. And you know that on this show we talk quite a bit about narcissistic abuse and things like that. So we're real excited to have Darlene come back and talk about that. I want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing this incredibly important information with us, Darlene.
Oh, thank you very much. I really appreciate it, Randy, and I really enjoy your show, and I know my followers do too because they write me about it.
Isn't that great? Thank you so much, Darlene. That's very generous of you to share that. So anyway, we will talk again next week, just less than a week, and I'll look forward to that. So I hope that you have a wonderful day, and thanks again.
Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
Thank
bye-bye.
You.
So we are out of time for today, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show, you can email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com, RANDIGFINE.com. Please visit my website at randygfine.com and sign the guest book. Check out my hundreds of, I don't even know how many, but there's hundreds of articles there about all kinds of things. That really can help to improve your life experience and your wellness, emotional, spiritual, and physical. On the second Friday of every month, which will be next Friday, I'll see my calendar, which will be the 12th of February, I will be taking your calls and answering your questions about your personal narcissistic abuse issues. That happens the second Friday of every single month. I will be giving you free advice on the air. And if you cannot call in at 11 a.m., you can email me again at loveyourlife@randygfine.com and tell me what your question is, spell it out to me, and I will read it on air and answer it. So I'm hoping to hear from you and to give you some assistance with that. All my shows are archived after broadcasting and can be listened to at your convenience on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, or through the show links on my website. Thanks again for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. This is Talk Radio show host, life issues counselor, and author Randy Fine signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about Randy at her website, Randy G. Fine, RANDIGFINE.com. Join her next time for more of A Fine Time for Healing.
Hard not to hesitate, but we can't wait to be